Welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about Spider-Man supporting character Flash Thompson. And of course, my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Hello.
All right. And as always, first we will go through the solicitations. So let's start here. Let's see here. Cavewoman Killing Dinos 101. What is this?
Well, according to TFAW, it's a one-shot where Cavewoman, or Miriam, is teaching a class how to defend yourself and defeat dinosaurs. And they, of course, make the obligatory Van Halen reference.
Okay.
Well, let's face it, the way Cavewoman was drawn with, you know, Cavewoman and leopard print or dino skin print skirt and basketball strapped to her chest, which... Again, this is like Xenoscope all over again for me.
No, it actually is. I don't think it's as good as Xenoscope, but let's move on.
Let's move on. Can anyone say they read Cavewoman for the writing?
It's not Playboy, JT. Okay. Yeah. So let's see here. You have Avatar Press, Black Library, Bongo Bongo Bongo. So Happy in the Jungle. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. Adventure Time.
Yeah, I've read a few issues here and there of Adventure Time when I've been in the store. It's good stuff. It's like episodes they never animated. But
Adventure
it's
Time for you and your friends.
Still blows my mind that that's Bender as Jake.
Jake the dog and Finn the human.
Yeah.
What about Cake?
I haven't seen any of the Fiona and Cake episodes yet.
There's only two.
Well, I've seen neither.
Time.
Let's see what else we got. Actually, the Loki Ragnarok and Roll first issue is kind of entertaining. It's done by, I can't remember the artist. It's the same artist that does Fanboys versus Zombies for Boom Studios. And it's basically Loki gets thrown, he's got to prove something to Odin. And I got to reread, I've picked it up. I just got to reread it again to really make sense of the plot. But Loki has to prove something to Odin. So he leaves Asgard. He ends up on Earth, and he becomes the front man for a rock band.
Okay. I've heard of worse premises.
Yeah. And, yeah, it just kind of goes from there. I was like, well, why not? And it's not like your mom and... It's not your dad's Marvel comic kind of Loki. It's him and Thor are designed to actually look like barbarian gods, and Thor is full of bluster, and he's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Like, more so than Loki. Like, Loki is, I'm the god of mischief. What do you want? And Thor is just a dick. So, but that first issue was okay, so I'll probably pick up the series. It's only four issues. What else we got here? Cinebook, Comic Shop News.
Dark Horse.
Yeah. What do you got in Dark Horse? New issue of BPRD. New Conan. New Skyman. Actually, have you read any of the Dark Horse superhero comics that they've come out with in the last...
Not any of the new ones, but Skyman, huh?
Yeah, it's... well, the plot... I read the... Flip through the first issue. It's basically a... this African-American fighter pilot is roped into, like, this government program where we're going to create a hero the people can look up to. Because this is in and amongst the same world as, like, the new incarnation of X and Ghost and Captain Midnight and all that. And... Except Skyman, like, I forget his civilian ID. He's got, like, this PTSD of, like, he's afraid of being a flying. But, it kind of gets over it in short measure. So, but, yeah, a lot of the superhero stuff that Dark Horse has been doing the last couple of years, like, reinvigorating all this, some older characters like, Captain Midnight, which, World War II era hero, and stuff like Ghost and X, which was, like, popular in the heyday of Dark Horse in the mid-90s, like that. Right around the time Pamela Anderson thought she could be barbed wire.
Moving on.
Exactly.
Moving on, we have some
DC.
Yeah. You have Amanda Connor drawing just covers for Harley Quinn, but no interiors.
Which is a crime.
Yes. You have nothing I'm really interested in.
Oh, they got the new trade of We Three, which I've read, but I've never added it to my collection, which I might have to pick that up. Which is basically We Three is a Grant Morrison tale of a cat, a dog, and a bunny who are cybernetically augmented as part of like this military experiment, and then they're given like their intelligence is upgraded to almost human levels, and it's basically it's Homeward Bound by way of the X-Files, let's say.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I've read it in the past. Let's see here.
Let's see what else we have. Well, actually, that Federal Bureau of Physics series, it's kind of cool. It's kind of like doing an ongoing series based on the premise of Lost, where, you know, physics have gone nuts in the world, and there's like a separate bureau within like the FBI that investigates science-based crimes, where, you know, gravity has gone haywire, you know, a tesseract is randomly opened in a school or something like that. It's interesting if you ever want to try something weird like that.
All right, we got some IDW here. Well, after Dynamite, with Dynamite, I see some more Red Sonja by Gail Simone. Ash in the Army of Darkness.
Uh-huh. At King's Watch series, which is basically them. It's like a modern-day version of the Defenders of the Earth. It's Flash Gordon, the Phantom, and Mandrake the Magician teaming up to stop an invasion from the planet Mongo. But this is the Flash they use here is like Flash before he starts fighting Ming the Merciless.
Flash. Save the universe.
That should be my ringtone on my cell phone. That would be awesome. Let's see what he got. Vampirella, Warlord of Mars. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not a whole lot there. Although that, I read that the first couple issues of the Badass series, and it's kind of interesting in that the main character is this guy named Dead End who, I know, he gets out of every situation, but he can see where all the dominoes, how the dominoes are going to fall in any given situation, so he can get out of anything. I don't know. You'd have to read it to make sense of it. I just kind of find it because it's kind of over-the-top action violence like that. Mm. And let's see what else we got. Fantagraphics, Happy Medium, IDW. Well, New Godzilla came out this week, and the New Godzilla series has just been fun. It's the whole thing with IDW. Once they picked up the Godzilla license, like they did Godzilla, you know, King of All Monsters, and they had just a year run on that, and then a year run on just Godzilla. So like the longer running Godzilla series they've done outside of the miniseries have all been building the story within this universe. And they just keep, you know, introducing all these classic like kaiju monsters. They haven't shown Gamera yet, although I'm sure that's going to happen, you know, giant flying turtle, but they've introduced like friend pretty much every, children. What's that?
Friend of all children.
Exactly. But, I mean, they've had in, like, Titanosaurus, Garon, King Caesar showed up in this last issue 9. So they're making an effort to at least have at least one or two issue appearances of all these classic kaiju villains. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about Godzilla.
Well, and what else? Just talking about Godzilla.
Yeah. And, well, the new issue of the X-Files conspiracy event has come out with the Ninja Turtles, which...
Heroes in a half shell.
Turtle power. Because it's basically the X-Files conspiracy. It's spinning off of the X-Files season 10 comic.
Which Ninja Turtles? Are these are the Mirage Turtles?
Nah, this is the IDW series, but it's heavily influenced by more of the Mirage era. In terms of style and story than any actual narrative. Although they introduce the aspect that the Turtles and the Rat Splinter are the reincarnations of Hamato Yoshi from like feudal Japan and his sons. So it made for some interesting stories, but I think you really have to be a hardcore fan of the Ninja Turtles because casual turtle fans might get
like
turned
you.
Off by some. No, I like the series. That's
what I'm saying. A hardcore fan like you.
Yeah.
You're so hardcore. You would ask an artist who never even drew the Ninja Turtles to draw it.
We were never going to talk about that on air, Ben. Anyway, the story for those who don't know what the conspiracy is, well, it turns out that the lone gunmen aren't really dead, spoilers, and they get a packet, they get an email from the future detailing the events of this like horrible virus that's going to wipe out like crap tons of humanity, but they also get like articles from tabloids about transforming robots and these ghost hunters in New York and amphibians in Northampton and such like that. So
Ghostbusters, Transformers, and
Ninja Turtles and the Crow. So the lone, but they find out in like the first issue of like, you know, X-Files conspiracy number one, like they kind of go team up with Mulder and they find out that this stuff is actually real. Cause they show Mulder like a picture from this tabloid and Mulder's like, what the, I just saw this picture get taken. So there is something to this email. So the lone gunmen are traveling across the Eastern Seaboard, you know, checking with the Ghostbusters and finding the Ninja Turtles and all that. And they're basically trying to figure out how this all adds up to this super virus that's going to wipe out humanity. So as the basis for a crossover, it's not that bad. I mean, IDW with some of their licensed stuff like this, like they had the two infestation crossovers where basically this Cthulhu zombie hive mind tries to invade the world of this comic called the Covert, like CVO Covert Vampire Operations. And then the villain from that crosses over into like Star Trek and G.I. Joe and Ninja Turtles and Transformers in separate realities. And like, in order to gain power enough to take over the world, it was a decently written crossover, the both of them. So I would definitely recommend those.
Excellent.
That's Image. What do we got? Ghosted, for those that don't know, it's basically Ocean's 11 by way of The Exorcist, which is,
yes.
No, that's literally what it is. It's about this guy who was in prison, who in his last big job, like everybody died, like his crew, the people in the building, cops, and he's the only one to like survive it. And then he gets busted out of prison by this reclusive eccentric to raid a haunted house and steal a ghost. And he gets together a crew of people to do it up. So it's very much Ocean's 11 inspired. Once we got Krampus, you know, the adventures of the anti Santa Claus.
Yes. Let's see here. Let's. I don't see anything else with Image we need to talk about. Let's go down. Marvel.
Last issue of Daredevil. Well, for now. New Warriors came out this week. I missed that. I'll have to pick that up. Do you see anything you like, Ben?
Not really.
I will say the Amazing X-Men, that series, which is basically the return of Nightcrawler. It's been fun so far. I figured they might have had the story wrapped up by now, but maybe it's going a little longer than I thought. But it's been a decent story so far about the X-Men getting sucked into the afterlife and Nightcrawler's demon daddy has decided, well, I'm going to pattern myself after a pirate and raid heaven for souls. And it's a little more involved than that, but pretty much, yeah. Let's see what else we got here. New Warriors, New Nova. I like that Disney's Kingdom, Seekers of the Weird. That first issue kind of got me hooked on that.
Mm.
It's from what I've read. I flipped through the first issue and it's enough that I'll probably pick up this one. It's basically the plot of this miniseries is based on a ride or like an attraction at Disney World that they never actually built, but it was going to be like this basically museum of the weird. And then it just for one reason or another, it never happened.
All right. Well, let's move on. Let's see here. I think that's all we have for the solicitations this week, so we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we are going to talk about the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just
kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Come on, man.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's DeCian, the superhero webcomic. DeCian has superhero antics and sexy girls. Catch updates weekly at DeCian.com and NoSuperPants.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back to discuss the topic of the show. Of course, one of the oldest supporting characters in the Spider-Man lineup. We are talking about Flash Thompson. Eugene Flash Thompson.
Did they ever mention in the comic books why he's called Flash?
Because Eugene is not a very friendly name.
Although you did learn why he was called Flash in Spectacular Spider-Man, but that's for other reasons entirely, you know.
Yes. Well,
unrelated.
To start, the Flash Thompson character started as a typical bully character who picked on the nerdy Peter Parker. And the thing is, some people would say, well, this is a very vapid characterization. You know, it is what a teenager would be like, you know?
Well, yeah, but I mean, this is like as bullying as much as it was from like the 60s to the, you know, say the 80s. Because let's face it, once social media happened, bullying takes on a different shade altogether. But this is like classic, like, you know, talking smack, pushing him into a locker, just calling him, you'll never have a girlfriend, dork. You know, that kind of bullying. And but what's also, for those that know or don't know, is he's also Spider-Man's biggest fan.
Yes.
Which is kind of, it's weird in a way. Like, which is one of the cool things about Flash Thompson is, like, you know, he's this complete dick to Spider-Man, but he's also Spider-Man's biggest fan.
Well, I think what really helps with the Flash Thompson character and the growth with the character is the fact that, you know, people look at him and say, well, what makes him tick?
Yeah, because you don't get that for many years in the comics. I mean, initially, he's literally, like they said, it's this vapid one-note joke. You know, he's big man on campus. You know, he picks on Peter Parker. And then eventually you learn that, you know, his dad's like an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And, you know, what else? His dad's, you know, and I don't know, is it ever said that he's beaten or abused, or it's just that his dad just like, you ain't nothing? Like,
well, that. Physically abused.
Yeah. But not like sexually. He's just smacked around. You know, I guess it would be fair to say, because once you read these storylines later on, specifically in like, say, the mid to late 90s, where they had the quote unquote first Spider-Man reboot, where Peter gave up being Spider-Man and was living in this posh apartment with, you know, his model wife and his Aunt May. And that's around the time Flash was working for Norman Osborn, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the thing is, there's lots of stages with Flash, and you sort of skipped a couple because Flash was drafted. Or
was he drafted, or did he just like freely joined?
You gotta remember, in the Marvel's timeline, initially he was drafted in the Vietnam.
Yeah.
But then the time scale shifted to where he joined and went to some unspecified overseas conflict.
Yeah. He was in the Asian front,
yes.
Such as it was. Yeah.
Yes. Well, and when he came back, a much more thoughtful, mature person who you know, sadly he did turn to alcohol himself for a while, so.
Well, you know, because he was suffering from shell shock.
Yes, he was.
It hadn't yet become PTSD. Yeah, and that's also, when you look at some of the flashback stories of the time, that's where he met Shashan, who's like this woman that he fell in love with. And
yes.
Did they marry or did they just date?
They just dated.
But having him dating the old Asian chick kind of was like the step forward for Flash, who... Not that he was ever like racist or anything in the comics, it's just you see that he's grown up quite a bit.
Yes.
Because before he went off to war, you know, it was around the time where him and Peter were, he would still pick on Peter, but it was more of a friendly ribbing almost at that time. Like they,
and Peter always gave back verbally.
Well, yeah, he all he had to do was give back verbally. Cause I mean, in the very early days, I think it was like 5, 6, or 7, somewhere in that very early, the first 20 some issues of Spider-Man, you know, Flash is harassing Peter, and, you know, and this is where Peter's still wearing glasses to, you know, doing the whole Clark Kent thing. And he shoves Peter and his glasses break, and Peter's like, okay, buddy, you and me, let's go. And this teacher puts him in a boxing ring to work it out. And Peter's like, okay, I'm only going to put like a quarter of my spider strength into this punch, which is still the holy hallelujah Rocky Balboa style punch that floors Clubber Lang kind of, yes. Because the way Steve Ditko read, Flash has got his face all mussed up, and he's like, I don't want to eat the apricot, father. You know, yes. Like, he just got the stupid beat out of him. But because just that look that Flash had, it was so good. And I mean, from then on, he's still kind of here and there picked on Peter. But after that, not all the time Peter didn't have to come back. That's like where, you know, like Gwen Stacy and Liz Allen and Harry Osborn and Mary Jane would just turn to Flash and tell him to shut the hell up, basically. But yeah, I mean, it went on. He joined the army, and there was like a long period, I think through the 70s and into the 80s, where Flash didn't show up all that much. Like, he was always there, but I mean, there's like long periods of time where Flash, you know, he shows up at a party that Peter and Mary Jane throw, right? Like, it's not like he wasn't completely gone from the comics, but he just wasn't used a lot.
That's true. Well, the thing is, one of the things that really got me upset was, you know, Flash Thompson was in a coma for a while, and he woke up during the storyline The Other, and this was around the time where Peter Parker was a science teacher at his old high school. And Flash becomes the PE teacher at the high school too, and starts picking on Peter again in the high school setting, and I did not like that, because because the thing is if he had that much of a memory gap, you know, because it's more than just his friendship with Peter that he forgot. I mean, it's all those years of maturity, the years of war, the years dealing with alcoholism. It's all that gone, and I just think that's a bit of a shame.
Well, yeah, because I mean, before he had his accident, I mean, it was around this, like I said, around that time where they had this quasi reboot where John Byrne was doing the art in Amazing Spider-Man, and this is after the end of like the Clone Saga and everything like that. And Flash got hired; he basically became the Otis to Osborn's Lex Luthor.
Yes,
for a couple of years, solely because like Osborn and Peter know who the other is, and he just hired Flash just basically to piss off Peter Parker. And he wasn't as dumb as Otis naturally, but eventually, as a part of one of Osborn's many plans to screw with Peter, he kidnaps Flash, force feeds him booze, and then this is where, you know, he has the wreck that gives him, that he goes into the coma and he comes out and he's Flash Thompson again. Although after a while, they kind of downplayed that after a while, and I remember there's an issue where he apologized to Peter for being a dick.
Yes.
And then you see like a real friendship kind of start with them. Of course, this happened not all that long before Brand New Day.
Yeah. So how much of this actually really is sticking around, we don't know.
Well,
because one of the problems and one of the many reasons, and I say many reasons because there are many reasons why JMS refused to have his name on it, was because JMS wanted to have a clear laid out foundation of what is still in and out of canon, and that was shot down.
Yeah.
And that's one of the many reasons. I mean, you need a laundry list of the reasons JMS took his name off of it. I mean, it's insane how many reasons. I mean, the thing is, he was given a bad hand to begin with, because he, number one, he was told on his watch to annul the spider marriage, and number two, was told pretty much how to do it, and he had to still write a good story out of it. I mean, it's hard to do it with that much editorial oversight. Number three, when he wants to like give throw the fans a bone about it, you know, he was shot down. It's going back to Flash Thompson, I'm sorry, but you know, I just have to give a little bit of a mini rant here and just say JMS was, you know, totally understand his position about why he took his name off of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, and for those that don't know, Ben is talking about J. Michael Straczynski, you know, creator of Babylon 5 and all that, who had a really, it was like, what, 2 or 3 year run writing Amazing Spider-Man. And he brought in, like, one of the best, just the quick Spider-Man set, he brought in one of my favorite, you know.
Are you talking about Ezekiel?
Not Ezekiel. Okay, it's, thank God. It's not, yeah, you know, a lot of that stuff, but it's one. It's a question he asked towards the end of the thing, because there's this whole thing where, you know, there's like this spider god that, you know,
spider totem.
Spider totem, and that's why Peter has the powers, and it's, you know, it's towards the end of that Ezekiel storyline where there's this like native, or I guess it's Aztec shaman, because it's in like Brazil or Colombia or something, where he asks him, "Does it matter what gave you the power, the radiation or the spider?" You might as well ask, is the sun going to rise tomorrow? You know, it's stuff like that that I enjoyed from JMS. It wasn't all gold. But what he tried to do with some of, like, Flash and all the other side characters, and then, like you say, he's just, it's like, how can you write a good story when you're constantly getting post-it notes of what you're supposed to do differently? So, I can see why he's pissed off at the whole thing. You know, and then Peter made a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
Which, as far as I've read, and I've pretty much read Spider-Man constantly since the early 90s, and what they did with Brand New Day, where, you know, Peter Parker makes a deal with Mephisto to, you know, save Aunt May's life, and his price is, you know, I want the happiness of your marriage. The writers came up with the concept that Peter Parker and Mary Jane never got married. They still lived together for years after that. So that's, it's kind of a weak cop-out story, but...
Yeah, and at the same time, the thing is, if Mary Jane and Peter Parker actually talked to May, Aunt May, one last time with Mephisto there, you know what Aunt May would have said?
Let me go.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I mean,
I'm like, gee, it's you don't do that. That way, it's like, you know, she's like, Peter, I lived a long life. I got to see you do great things with your life. You know, this is natural. You got to let me go. And then.
Yeah. And I mean, it's.
I think the writers saw this as their chance to, like, get rid of, like, 85% of the things that they wanted to get rid of. They saw this as their chance to, okay, we want to have the web shooters back. We want to get rid of the biological web shooters and the stingers and
all that.
They saw this as their chance to, okay, this also gets rid of the disassembled storyline where Peter Parker gives birth to himself. Good. Okay, this gets rid of the what?
No, I agree with you. I was just thinking, yeah, it's that gave birth to himself, like I needed to think of that again.
Oh, we can bring back Harry Osborn now.
Well, okay, and again, this is like a soap opera revelation with the whole Brand New Day thing. It's like, oh, he wasn't dead. He was just off recuperating in Europe for the last 3 years. Although they write in that story is, well, once you're off the island, you pretty much cease to exist anyhow. Which, I can see that, because I've run into people in my own life that I haven't... I'll see people around town here in Saskatoon, and maybe there's somebody I haven't seen for a while. Or where the hell... Well, I moved out to Regina. Well, I thought you were dead. You know, but I mean, as far as Flash goes, I mean, basically Brand New Day, it doesn't affect Flash all that much, because he comes out on the other side of Brand New Day, you know, at the welcome home party for Harry Osborn. He's still a PE teacher at Midtown, and then he decides to re-enlist in the army and rejoin the, you know, go to help out in the Iraq war.
And then he lost both his legs and then became Venom.
Well... There was a while that he was, it's just Flash in the wheelchair, and you're trying to learn to live life again. I mean, they even have an episode where he's not backpedaling into alcoholism, but everyone can see that he's not, you know, he's not completely happy. So, you know, they help him get a new place. He gets, you know, from the support, he gets a lot of support from family and friends. And it's around this time, like, he gets a new rehab trainer who turns out to be his ex, Shashan, who later goes on to be Aunt May's rehab trainer when Aunt May has an accident. And they have this storyline where Flash's dad is dying. And I think it's around this time where, yeah, Flash's dad is dying from, like, basically liver failure. And Flash just constantly, you know, he refuses to go say goodbye to his dad from all the crap that his dad piled on him growing up, like all the abuse and the harsh words, and he won't be nothing but a drunk like your old man. And that's literally what his dad says. And I haven't read it. Do you remember if he made it to his dad's bedside before he passed, or was it just after?
I think just after.
Yeah. Because his mom's there, and it's like, where were you? And Flash, you know, he sits there, you know, kind of sobbing on, you know, his dad's body, is like regretting that he never made it there in time. Which was a kind of a powerful story when you think about it, because, like, I never got to see, like, my dad passed away from a few years ago from a heart attack, so that kind of hit me hard, because I never got to say goodbye either.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can kind of see that. It's like, you know what, it might be a comic book, but that doesn't make it any less true. So, but yes, like Ben said, Flash becomes Venom, or Agent Venom.
Oh, God.
And the basically, it's not like Flash was like the first guy, because they reference in the new Flash series that there was one or two guys before Flash, because the idea is that the government has basically chemically neutered the symbiote so it isn't as maliciously active as it was before with Eddie Brock. So there you get like the best of the best of the best of the best, and these guys get bonded to the Venom symbiote for no more than 48 hours, or the symbiote could start taking control. And after about two or three issues or missions, well, it goes south in a right darn hurry, and Flash ends up becoming permanently bonded to the symbiote, and then he becomes an Avenger.
Yes.
Or a secret Avenger, such as it is.
Yes.
And then he got his own series where after... Well, I mean, they had... In the Flash title, I mean, they had some decent stories. Like, they have... what was Betty Brant's brother? What was his name?
I forgot.
But his... Betty Brant's brother returns as, like, the new crime master, who... One of his operatives is this... The Jack-O-Lantern, who is basically the Joker with... out the style. Like, the guy's just completely psychotic. And Jack-O-Lantern and Crime Master know who Flash is, and they basically use this to blackmail him to commit a bunch of crimes. And eventually Venom has no more of this, and he whoops both their asses and seemingly kills the Crime Master, although it's the Marvel Universe, and a really determined writer can resurrect anybody. I mean, they brought back Norman freaking Osborn after getting impaled. But, yeah, so... Flash has that. He ships off to Philadelphia because, you know, wants to reestablish himself in another city and, you know, just kind of be his own hero instead of always having to be in, you know, Spider-Man's backyard.
Yep.
And eventually that series got flushed. So now that, you know, he's back, they had this great, it was called The Darkest Hours in Superior Spider-Man, where Otto Octavius, or Spock, as we like to call him around the show.
Spock!
Ah!
Kyle!
Yeah. So Spock tricks Flash into coming to, like, his this medical clinic, which is run by Cardiac, who's, like, this vigilante superhero doctor guy. He tricks Flash, and he's like, I can help you out with that. I'll give you robot legs. But he also uses the opportunity to forcibly remove the symbiote, which causes... you know, pain on both ends of that. And Flash is like, you idiot. You look what you've done. You've hurt it. It's going wild. And Spider-Man's like, you got legs. You're welcome. You know, being a dick or being a superhero in the most super villainish ways. And then the symbiote gets loose and bonds with Spider-Man. It causes him to yell at Aunt May and say mean things to her. And eventually the bond that they say for like the fourth or fifth time in the last 3 years with Flash and the symbiote, you can't be apart from the symbiote, you'll die without it. And Flash is just like, yeah, got that memo already. And after that, from what I've heard going forward, at least with the stories, Flash Thompson is going to be joining the Guardians of the Galaxy in the next couple of months.
Ooga chaka.
Ooga chaka. Oh, please. You haven't watched the trailer 3 or 4 times either, listener. I mean, that's the comic history, but what about the animated history of Flash Thompson?
I don't think there's that much of an animated history. I mean, I saw him on Ultimate Spider-Man, and he's a bit of a douche. He, the shitty Fox series had him actually hook up with Deborah Whitman.
Deborah Whitman, and you think he was dating Felicia Hardy for a while, too, in the series.
Yeah, but I don't know what they were trying to pull Mike by hooking. Ultimately, he hooked up with Deborah.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know what they were pulling there.
Well, they're going for that whole smart girl jock Beauty and the Beast thing. You know, Ultimate Spider-Man, he hasn't appeared that much, but it's a very basic Flash character. I think the best version of Flash, at least the one with the most character development was on Spectacular Spider-Man. Where, you know, he was a bully, he was picking on Parker. It was a little mix of, like, the Ultimate Spider-Man comics version of Flash with some of the more classic elements, which was the best thing about Spectacular Spider-Man, because it mixed, you know, everything from a lot of different Spider-Mans. But I mean, they had in the second season of the show, they had where, you know, he breaks his leg and he's trying to get with Shoshan, shows up in the show as just like a girl in high school, and Flash is like, hey, I'm gonna date her, and she's not having any of it. And then he sees she's in this play, and he actually, you know, they wanted to go. They wanted to have him grow up, maybe not join the military, but, you know, he would have grown up in the show, because, you know, he makes that effort to, you know, get a part in the play and show Shoshan, I'm not just a jock and all that. Although I think one of the best, did you watch a lot of Spectacular Spider-Man?
We talked about this.
And you weren't that much of a fan.
Although it was the art style mainly that kept me out. It's not a very Spider-Man art style.
The character designs, I would agree with you, although the way they had Spider-Man move in the show is like, yeah, that's Spider-Man.
The art style took me out of it.
I get that. It's not like, okay, like you said, like I like the 94's Fox series. It's not the best Spider-Man. Although the way Spider-Man moved in there, it's like you could be moving a lot faster, is what I'm saying.
You could also be able to punch.
Yeah. Standards and practices, my ass.
It's just because John Semper doesn't know how to talk to a room full of censors.
Yeah.
Talked to the same people. He got what he wanted.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, okay, Flash, my favorite was in Spectacular Spider-Man. The Flash they used in Ultimate Spider-Man, like I said, it's a very basic Flash. Although, they don't have
the whole... You got the basic chassis, you know, the basic parts, no extras, no leather. No... Yeah.
Just the different paint job, really. Because instead of Flash having the crap beat out of him by Peter Parker in the boxing ring, they have the Rhino episode where you find out that Flash is bullying... not just on Peter Parker, but this scrawny little kid named Alex O'Hearn, who
basically... turns into the Rhino.
Well,
by drinking Rhino juice. Which I, by the way, have a problem with. Because the thing is, what I would have preferred is if they actually went with the Ultimate Comics Rhino.
Oh, where he's in the giant mech suit?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Because you have this nerdy kid, and if this nerdy kid built like this Rhino mech suit, it's like... okay, there you go. I'm getting into it, yeah. but he drinks Rhino juice.
Yeah, and... he steals one of Otto Octavius's experiments that was confiscated after he was revealed to be, you know, Dr. Octopus, and yeah, he drinks some like lime flavored Rhino. Like,
you know what that reminds me of? You know what the other reminds me of? Have you ever seen Gremlins 2? And you like see all those beakers with like a silhouette on the side.
The Bat Gremlin, the Spider Gremlin,
exactly. The Fishy Gremlin. That's exactly what it is.
You have to admit, Ben, the Brain Gremlin was awesome.
Yes, he was. But like I said, tell me I'm wrong about that. That's practically how they lifted it. Here's some extra set pieces from Gremlins 2. Here's a Rhino beaker. With Rhino juice.
Oh, that would have been scary. Yeah, and I mean, beyond the TV, we've got the two film versions of Flash Thompson. You got the Jersey Shore version that showed up in Spider-Man's 1 and 3.
He only showed up in 1.
No, he's actually, if you look at the funeral in the third movie, he's in the crowd of mourners there at Harry's funeral.
I did not notice.
Well, I did, but I tend to notice things like that. And then there's Chris Zilka played Flash in the...
The only character with character development in that whole movie.
Yeah, because you have him beat literally punching the crap out of Peter Parker. Although I did like the Peter on Flash scene in the gym with the basketball.
Which, by the way, should not have gotten his parents called to pick him up. Because, you know what? If you have a guy do a three-pointer slam dunk.
From half court.
Yeah, that's a three-pointer slam dunk. Number one, that's physically impossible. Number two, oh my god, he did a three-pointer slam dunk. Number two, okay, he body-checked Flash, and not even that hard.
Yeah.
And oh, he broke the backboard, but he just did a three-pointer slam dunk. Okay.
And then, yeah, and I mean, later on
the film... It's like Peter's like, am I in trouble? And the coach would be like, no, you're on the team!
No, it's like that line from Suburban Commando, what are you, crazy? This is the 90s, we're gonna sue you. I mean, because that's more or less, it's a paraphrase at best of what happened. But yeah, and then you see later on, like after Uncle Ben dies, where Flash is like, Peter, you okay? He tries to...
Be a human being.
Yeah, he's trying to be a human being. And you see at the end, by the end of the film, him and Parker are at least talking to each other civilly, and he's right. Got the Spider-Man t-shirt.
And I'm going to just say it one more time, because I still think if you have someone do a three-pointer slam dunk, there is no way in hell he's in trouble at that school. I don't care if he broke the backboard. The coach is like, no, you're not in trouble. You're on the team.
Yeah, but he might have been in trouble for a little bit, but he wouldn't have been in, like, for very long. And, yeah, I mean, there's other versions of Flash, like, at least in animation. There was, like, the 90s, or not the 90s, but there was the MTV CGI series.
It does not exist.
Yeah, except for Neil Patrick Harris voicing Spider-Man, which I liked. I think he showed up in, like, one episode of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, but I haven't seen that series for years, so I can't be certain. And I don't think he ever showed up in the 60s series at all, or at least not by name.
I don't think so, but I think that's plenty about Flash Thompson.
What's your final word on Flash, let's say?
I like the idea of the character that that was the bully, that befriends the main character, befriends the hero, but it has to be a slow process, it has to be a natural process. I mean, let me bring up a manga here that I enjoy. There's a manga that I used to read called Hajime no Ippo. And I know this is like a big shot in the dark for most American comic fans, but Hajime no Ippo is about this high school kid named Ippo who joins a boxing gym and becomes a professional boxer. And there's like these three kids that always pick on him in school. And the leader of this gang is like the worst of the bullies. And the thing is, it's like this very kind of natural thing where they find out he's a boxer and they think, oh, he's just learning to box to get revenge on us. And then they, curiously, these bullies watch him box once. And it's like, oh, he's actually really good. So it's like the other two bullies sort of drop off, but the lead bully just keeps on watching him boxing, and then he starts cheering for him, and he starts helping him out. And it's like, and number one, this is a very long-ass manga. It's like over 1,000 chapters, so if you don't want to read it, I understand. But it's basically, they're, you know, by one point in the manga, this bully character is Ippo's best friend. And it comes off very naturally because it was a very natural progression.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the saddest chapters for me was there's a chapter where the bully, you know, now the best friend, he wants to start a new career as a manga artist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gonna leave and he's gonna try his best. And he's been helping out with the Ippo's family business. So basically, Ippo's mom is his boss, and the bully, you know, he feels bad about ever bullying Ippo, and he's about to confess to Ippo's mom that he was, you know, when Ippo was in high school, he came home with bruises, I was the one who did this. He was about to confess this, And it's actually a really touching moment to me, because it's sort of like, you know, because Ippo didn't want him to confess to this, because he's like, but we're friends now, that doesn't matter anymore. It's actually a really touching moment, and that's kind of what I want to see in the Peter Parker Flash Thompson relationship, you know?
Well, yeah, just where they kind of cross that line eventually. I mean, my favorite thing about Flash Thompson is you see that a bully character, like bullies, not all bullies, because there are personal experience, not everybody grows up, like not everybody leaves high school, but he's a character, like, of all the supporting characters in Spider-Man, his story is the one that I've enjoyed the most over the many years that I've been reading the comics and seeing him grow from, you know, reading the back issues of him bullying Peter to him, you know, going off to war, coming back, being like best buds with Peter before he has that slide back with a coma, and then he's like, ah, Putey Parker, how you doing, son? You know, like that. And you can even see, I mean, something like that character writers take to other characters, like, you know, Buford in Phineas and Ferb. He started off as like not a villain, but he was a bully initially, and then he becomes part of the team later on. And it's, you can see that maybe that was inspired in some ways by Flash Thompson. But overall, it's just, you need somebody like that, at least then when Spider-Man was created, you kind of needed somebody like that to give Peter Parker a push one way or the other. So definitely, yeah. Out of all the, he's definitely up there in, like, you know, say top five favorite Spider-Man supporting cast.
Absolutely.
So let's just hope he doesn't completely suck in the sequel to Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes. All right. Well, that wraps it up. And this is Joe's Ben.
And JT from Saskatoon.
And we are saying goodnight.
Later.